Hey everybody, it's Connor. Welcome to another amazing episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell, your favorite twins on the entire planet. And because we're your favorites, we know you can't get enough of us and you want even more. And I've got it for you. Drama Plus, which is the name of our Patreon, which is our bonus content platform, where for $5 a month, you donate to support the podcast. We can keep churning out these lovely interviews, chats, episodes, specials with you. And in addition to supporting us, we give you the goods. You get access to our Instagram close friends, and you get multiple bonus episodes a month where Dylan and I chit chat with each other about all the fun, scintillating, sizzling Broadway, pop culture, personal life drama that you're craving. All right. Well, thank you for finding us. Enjoy this episode and go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast for more. All right, on to the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I'm Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I feel like we always say this when we do it together, but it is always so strange to acclimate to recording when we're using the same mic.
I know.
But the energy is always better.
You know what I find? I don't worry about my angles on the video as much.
I actually do too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's such an interesting
thing. It's something that I'm less vain about when we're together in real life.
Let's be obvious. If you're looking at Zoom, you're staring at yourself.
Sometimes. I don't know. I've really gotten into, especially on the podcast, I do look at our guests.
Yeah, I do too. Mm-hmm. When they're like saying something important.
Because it's always like, oh my God, it's surreal. Like there's someone here like talking to us.
I know. It's so jarring. That's what I hate about when you work. Obviously, I love a hybrid model for, you know, a typical 9-to-5 job. But when you're sitting on your computer looking at yourself on Zoom or Teams or whatever all day, it really, you know, warps your sense of self. It also is weirdly exhausting because maybe you are fixating on yourself more than like others, but
maybe
super weird. But anyway, I'm super excited. I'm stoked about this guest.
I know. This is someone who we've wanted for a really long time. And before we jump in, I do want to say, for anyone out there who is not watching Canada's Drag Race,
I know that this random little jump in. I love it.
I know that I'm the foremost Drag Race historian here on Drama.
Absolutely.
And I just need to say, it is one of the best seasons we've gotten out of any of the franchises in a couple of years.
I would probably agree. Probably the best of Canada, don't you think?
Definitely the best. Well, I like the second one we enjoyed. It is just so fresh. The queens are really thirsty and hungry at the same time, I suppose, for the crown. There's this queen, Melinda Verga, who is in the best way, you know, like how we're saying we're always aware of ourselves on camera or during Zoom. She is not aware of herself on screen show. And she's acting like she's in a real live scenario that isn't going to be scrutinized by millions of viewers. And it has brought some of the juiciest, most intense drama, for lack of a better word.
I know. You're so right. Mm-hmm. Some of these like untucked moments are beyond.
I don't know if anyone has ever dropped the F-bomb that number of times in one. Yeah, maybe Heidi Ann Closet on Drag Race before. But anyways, it is so good. If anyone's looking for a fun catch up right now,
yeah,
Wow Presents Plus, it is amazing. That's not my dose of drama this week. It's just something that I wanted to talk about.
No, it's so good. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to keep catching up.
I know. After this podcast, I think we're going to have to go watch another episode. Okay.
I know, but Dylan, you know what's so funny? I just remembered one time when we were doing our very own podcast, we had Gavin Creel on. He was like, he turned off his Zoom camera because he wanted to just like focus on us. That reminded me of what we were just saying to each other about staring at ourselves on Zoom. Interesting segue, because we have one of the stars of the show that Gavin is putting out into the world right now.
Which I want to say, I feel like Gavin gave us the drama exclusive.
Do you feel that?
When he told us about Walk On Through, he gave us the whole, he laid the groundwork, he told us what it was going to be, and today we have one of the stars of it with us. Which is only running for a little bit longer.
I know, so that's why I'm glad we got him right before the end here.
I know, I feel very lucky. Our guest today is a history-making performer and Broadway star who has probably starred in all of your favorite shows. He can currently be seen alongside Gavin Creel in the world premiere of Walk On Through, Confessions of a Museum Novice at MCC, which will be followed by his return to the Broadway stage as Middle Noah in The Notebook. In 2020, our guest was nominated for a Drama Desk Award for Outstanding Actor in a Musical for his haunting performance in The Wrong Man. In addition to appearing on Broadway in Wicked and the original cast of Waitress, he is the first person in history to play all the male principal roles in Hamilton. He starred in the world premiere of The Outsiders and Water for Elephants, and regionally starred in South Pacific, West Side Story, Legally Blonde, Les Miserables, Next to Normal, Oklahoma, and more. Our guest also appeared as Scott in the Tick, Tick, Boom film directed by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and on television in one of our favorites, The Good Fight, The Code, One Star Rising, and Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO, now called Max. He is a 2022 recipient of the Cheetah Rivera Award, organizes for political causes, and is a teacher and director to aspiring artists. Please welcome to drama, Ryan Vasquez.
Yes, hit me with the intro and watch me bounce, honey. That was thorough and complimentary and everything I needed on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, you're
so me up. Also, thank you for the aside about Canada's Drag Race, because I watched the first episode the other night. I'm hopeful for these girls. It's the first episode, so it's impossible, but I am a big Drag Race person and watch all the franchises, and I'm excited for this one too, because I've been in a drought, even though it's usually waterboarding, but I'm sort of in a drought now because there's so much and now there's not.
The waterboarding starts with season 16 very soon.
Yeah, because we'll get that.
Yeah,
like an international All-Stars coming? I think I heard a rumor that they filmed it already.
They did.
Is there? Mm-hmm. Is there? Wow. Yeah.
Might have Alyssa Edwards up. Like one of the early rumors.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice. Okay. We can always do more Alyssa Edwards content in my feed.
Yeah, I totally. I did not know you were a Drag Race fan, Ryan. Just out of curiosity, who is like your favorite queen that you find yourself drawn to?
I mean, I really love the, like, obviously, like, the early days, like, sort of Sharon Needles, like, you know, offbeat, like, trend that begins, that sort of creates the, like, Chad Michaels, Sharon Needles sort of like off that is in every scene, you know, or every season rather, yes, you know, totally. But I love like those early girls, like Alyssa, like Detox, Alaska, obviously, like that, like sort of like golden era season.
Okay.
But now, I mean, like, it's interesting, right? It's kind of the same with like our media in general, just how it's like transitioning the whole like sugar and spice of it all, right? Like there are lots of queens that are like living this sort of like Instagram, like online way of doing it. And it's not to belittle it, but it literally just is different.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing now, like, especially just like consumable media, just what a premium that has, and how those early seasons of Drag Race, it's like Raja making all her outfits for that all winter season and winning and doing, it's just like such an amazing story, because now it just feels the mass production of it all. It's just wild.
Totally.
So true.
We'll talk about favorite queens. Bimini is one of my favorite queens ever. Yeah. I love Bimini. I got put on the spot. But
I can never think of my favorites when people ask, you know, it's but I usually go for the same era. Work very compatible, Ryan. So this is going to be a great pod. We have similar faves.
Great. Yes. I'm loving it. Did y'all watch Squid Game The Challenge?
No. We watched the premiere on Thanksgiving, I will say.
Okay, yes. That is another pretty amazing. And like that, I'm a big game person. Like I love games, like board games and stuff, like in a real way. And so I love that show. Obviously the drama of it was amazing, but like the reality show I thought was super interesting because it's like different games and different psychological stuff. But like they do a montage at the end. It's not a spoiler, but they do like a montage at the end when they're down to three. They go back and show you shots that you've already watched that those people have been in that you had no idea because you were busy watching like the current like star that they were kind of like putting up, but that they knew would get eliminated in the fourth season. Like the editing is amazing. Wow. So you're like, oh, I've watched these people go through all the games. You actually see them pass every game, but you just weren't watching for them. And so it takes you through. It's super neat. Like, I just think that's so interesting. Yeah. Just like the editing and how the story like of reality TV, especially. Like they make like a narrative of just the whole thing. It's really interesting.
And how cool that they focused on different people and didn't just set up a winner the whole time, you know?
That's really interesting.
I've been meaning to watch it. I heard it was really, really good. And I think there was like a mother-son duo in there. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of gripping stuff going on. And of course,
They did
crushes
well
on some of the immediate
But of course.
That's what always draws me in.
Now, without spoiling it, were you pleased with who won?
I was pleased with who won. Okay. Yes. I felt like they deserved, and there was also no way I would have predicted it in the early like ons of the season, which is just always fun for a season of a show like that. Yeah. It's like when you just really don't see it coming, there's no way you would have.
It was no Sasha Colby situation.
Exactly. Right.
Oh my gosh, Ryan, you are so much fun. You seem well. We're catching you in the middle of the holiday season. We like to check in with our guests. Are you doing well?
I am doing well. Yeah. It's a nice, like, the weeks between Christmas and New Year's for me are always like a nice little dormant, like, reset, you know, where you get to just sort of be and like get your house together and kind of, you know, like get ready for the new year and stuff. And I really function well under that organizing, you know, like activities like that. So, yeah. So I'm doing really well and like at peace and excited for the new year. And aww. Yeah. How about y'all?
Are you an earth sign? Are you? I'm a Virgo, so I love like organizing and resetting my life.
I'm a Capricorn moon, so I definitely like will sit down with the journal of it all and stuff, but I'm a Leo rising and a Cancer sun. Oh. So while I'm sitting down with my journal, I'm crying. That's all that means.
That's so funny. Okay, so walk on through is like what, 2 more weeks left? A week and a half?
2 more weeks. Okay. Yeah, 2 more weeks. On January 7th, we close. It's been such a cool experience. Gavin has been amazing. It's amazing to even see it on stage, like after its life and stuff, since before the pandemic and all that. You never know what was going to survive and how things right. were going to change and everything. So it's already a blessing in that way. And then like to be able to have been available for it and like just admittedly like a busy time for me yeah. was just so serendipitous. And yeah, I'm really thankful to be there.
How did you get involved in it?
So Gavin is just awesome and like oh, yeah. really is constantly looking for and seeing potential in people that even he doesn't know. We both went to Michigan, so that's kind yes. of the asterisk in it all, but like he graduated long before I did, not to, you know, age either of us, but you know, I was on the subway and he approached me and was like, hi, like, are you Ryan Vasquez? I was like, yes. He's like, I'm Gavin Creel. I'm like, girl, we know. And he was like, oh, well, just nice to meet you, whatever. Like, he mentioned something that I was maybe doing at the time, but it was maybe like, you know, second or third year in New York. I had no business really knowing him. And he really just kept up. He was like, hey, would you want to come to this rehearsal of this thing that, you know, I'm working on that we're just going to present to 2 or 3 people, or a reading of something bigger, whatever. He has so much music in the can. The like cool story about Gavin and I is he actually asked me to sing for another show he's developing that I think is still in development that he was going to present to a few folks at the Public, friends of his. When you're at that level, it's funny. He's like, just a few friends. It's like Oscar Eustace, like Celia Keenan Bolger. Like, it's like, you know, it's like his agent from like, you know, William Morris or something. You're just like, oh, okay, yeah. Just a few friends.
Asked at the Gilded Age.
Yes, exactly. I mean, not wrong. Like, he's like, oh, there will be a few other singers. I'm like, I bet there will be. You got there like, whoa. So we, Casey Levy is another singer, you know, so it's like, so we learned a bunch of this music, but it was in rehearsing that show just for this small little reading. He's like, I'll pay you in brunch type thing. They were casting my track in Hamilton next door in like the same studios in Pearl. And they came out and saw me and kind of had like an aha moment and was like, oh, we should bring him in. And it all happened in like 3 days or something. So I joked to Gavin, he actually had me doing this little like spoken word part in one of his songs. And I was like, you're getting me ready for my Hamilton audition. We were like joking about it. We were like, yeah, sure. Okay. And I was, 2 days later, I came back. I was like, I think I'm going to get this.
So this goes back kind of far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that wasn't walk on through, but that was like the relationship of it all. And then like multiple times he would get together with the director of Walk On Through. Linda Goodrich was our professor at Michigan, both of ours, and she is now the interim head of the department there and lives in New York and is restarting her career as like a New York director, which is just, I think, amazing. She's been a teacher for like 25 years. Oh, so it's really proof like you can do that, you know, like you can reinvent or like restart or rejuvenate whenever you want. So yeah, she and Gavin and I and other people would sort of get together and do like a number or two and stage them. And so it's all sort of been like the Play-Doh stage. But then in the last couple of years, you know, he got commissioned by the Met to do it at the Met, which we did at the end of 2021. And then they did a reading at Signature and they loved it and brought it to MCC. So, and I doubt it's the end for it, you know, like it's really great and deserves to be seen.
Absolutely. I mean, when he told us about it on our show in fall of 2021, it was so cute. He like wrote down our emails. He was like, oh, I want to invite you guys to the presentation. And we were like, oh, sure. You know, he's writing a darn email. He invited, you know, mm-hmm. he's yeah, such sure a enough. Nice guy. Mm-hmm. He invited us. I went, that was some of the best original, like pop-esque theater music I have heard in forever. I mean, I walked away from it being like, there's 5 or 6 hits in there of all hits. You know what I mean? It was so good. I need a cast album. So hopefully something like
both. Yeah. Trust me. The score is so, I mean, I respond to it so much because in many ways, like that is how I like to be creative with like still a sort of framework of like, you're going to go through the museum. You're going to, the things that speak to you, just stop and breathe them in and just write something about it. Maybe it's about the subject of it. Maybe it's about the artist. Maybe it's about your relationship to the thing. I mean, whatever it is, but like, it's truly the most authentic you could be creating something, right? It's like, you're not in any sort of strict structured thing other than, oh, this image, this piece of art spoke to me, and now I'm gonna sort of force myself. He walked through the museum, and when something would speak to him, if he came back to it, he said he would sit down and for 15 minutes write in his journal, like without picking up the pen, just to like sort of purge every thought he was having, get it down, and if he would walk away, something else would speak to him, he'd do the same thing, and he ended up with, you know, 20 or so of these paintings or sculptures or things that really spoke to him. So so creative and so well done. I think,
do you have any relationship to the Met? Like, was this sort of like an intro for you?
It was definitely an intro, which is funny because it was also an intro for Gavin. Like, the whole thing is like, I mean, Confessions of a Museum Novice is like the subtitle, right? The whole idea is that he jokes in the first line of this first song, like, I've never been here before, like, it's on the Upper East Side, I'm never gonna go, and like, you know, and it's so true. Like, we really do take those things, those New York things or those amazing like cultural things for granted. There's so much in New York that I haven't done because I've just been living a life here, you know, but it really is, it's amazing, just the like wealth and breadth of culture. And so he took the company like to the Met and did a sort of mini walk on through like situation, saw a bunch of the paintings and stuff. And so, yeah, but it makes me, to be honest, like, visual art was never something that I really responded to in the same way as like theater or music or anything. Like, I had trouble like appreciating it. And it wasn't until this show where there's a number at the end called Daydreamer that he and I sing, where a frame comes down and we both kind of look at the same picture and see it completely differently. And he's like, no, there's so much possibility in this. And that woman in the window has so much hope. And I'm like, she's despondent. Like, she, you know, these apartments are drab and the thing, you know, that's like what we're all experiencing seeing any type of art, right? Like, going to a musical, we're all walking out thinking whatever the message was is landing on us specifically because of every little decision that brought us to that place. And like, visual art serves the same purpose. It's like, you can look at a picture of like a farm and be brought back to your home in a way that's like profound, or you can think of, you know, like our time on Farmville and on Facebook in 2011.
I'm triggered all
not
of a sudden.
Not Farmville. Oh my God. I have not.
Talking about Farmville for a second. Shouts to Farmville. I logged some serious hours on Farmville.
You told me you were into games. So I am.
I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much only Farmville. I lied when I said games. I'm still on Farmville. Building an empire.
Oh, that's so funny. Wow. Well, so there's maybe like a handful of tickets left for the rest of the run. Yeah. So get in, do it, but maybe there'll be life beyond it, and maybe you'll be a part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully for all things, you know, like, if I've learned anything over the last year, it sort of just works out the way it's going to work out. And, you know, you got to be present in that moment no matter what. Like, if you end up being able to do something, it's a blessing, but the chances are, even the things you do, like, you don't end up being available for in the future or whatever. I mean, it's a crazy business we're in, so.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of which, you have been a part of 3 original musicals that are coming to Broadway this season.
Yes.
And I want to get into, I mean, it's crazy. I don't even know where to begin. So maybe before touching all of that, I want to ask you something we ask all of our guests.
Yeah, good idea.
Which,
good idea.
You know, we borrow Ring of Keys from one of our faves, Fun Home, because we like to think of this moment as maybe a recognition that you had when you were watching something or participating in something artistic. Could be you were walking through the Met for the first time. For many, it's like watching a show or being in a show, Ring of Keys moment. Do you feel like you had that at some point in your life that inspired you to get involved in the arts?
100%. I'm going to do a 3-pronged one. I know that's cheating, but it's just sort of... The first one, when I was maybe 6 years old, I got to go with the middle school class because my mom was a teacher at the school. She said, I think my son would enjoy this. And so, you know, I took my little ticket and saw The Phantom of the Opera in San Francisco. It's such a, like, an iconic show that now is just, I mean, like, all these shows that run forever, it's like you go through all these oscillations of feeling like it's amazing, and then you're like, it's been there forever, and then it closes and you're nostalgic for it and like all of it. But as a kid, I lost my damn mind when they took the curtain off when he's sitting at the end and he's not there, spoiler, you know, and the mask is on the thing. I lost my mind, and they kept us for a talk back afterward, and a few of the kids were asking questions, and finally I'm like maybe 6-7 years old, I raised my hand and I'm like, how did you do the disappearing at the end or whatever? And the stage manager, whoever was doing the talk back, it could have been an actor. He's like, that's the one secret we won't tell. And the way I got like red in the face, like I must, like now I must know, I must be in the Phantom of the Opera to figure this out. Since then I have friends in it, I've investigated. But I just thought that was like the mystery of it, the magic of that show, the epic, just sort of like theatricality of it. I was like, oh wow, this isn't something that's being recreated in its most real, like this is so heightened in a way that's like truly entertaining and also like gorgeous and the music and everything. So
who would you have wanted to play, Raoul or Phantom?
I was a kid, I was living my Phantom dreams in my bedroom, like, you know, like putting the thing, doing, you know, like yeah. the mask over. Yes, just a basically castrate range tenor singing Music of the Night in my bedroom. Not quite ready with the emotional vulnerability, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
And then I saw at my children's theater, so I grew up in San Jose, California. It's the home of the largest children's theater in the country. It does a ton of shows every year. They have a participation from like 8 to 20, and they cast everybody who auditions. So I started doing it as like just a community thing, and then sort of took a liking to it and began like really diving into this as like the culture throughout high school and stuff. And I saw a production of The Who's Tommy when I was young there that blew my mind. It was sort of how I sang, you know? So I was like, oh, it's not all like theater. There's this sort of like pop element of it. You know, we try to imitate that sound a lot in theater, but there's like no substitute for pop writers who've been doing it for a long time, who either created something that's being adapted or like write an original score for something. So I really like saw myself in that a little bit. And then I did that, you know, they repeat the productions every however many years. So when you're like aged into it, you're like, they're going to do Tommy when I'm a junior in high school, whatever. So I did that and like loved it. And it was a great experience. My mom always said that's the best thing she ever saw me in. I'm like, I literally played Hamilton on Broadway, but thank you for your time.
Were you the titular Tommy?
I was the titular tiniest Tommy. Not tiny at all. It was the height I am now. But yes, I was, yeah. Yes, I was the titular Tommy. Great music, just like amazing, bizarre show, but I'm really excited to see that when it comes to Broadway. And then I'll say the third one quickly is, because it's a Christmas season, Jim Carrey's performance in The Grinch.
Oh, we just watched it last night.
So did I. I watched it last night. We are on the same wavelength. It is so unreal. It's so heightened and theatrical. All the performances in that movie, I mean, Christine Baranski, like everybody, I mean, even like this sort of, you know, muted characters are still living amazing. Bill Irwin, like it's great. But wow. I mean, to take something that had basically no dialogue and they obviously wrote a screenplay, but like to create a whole like nuanced character, the whole bit where he's like deciding whether or not to go to the celebration and is like back and forth about it. And like she gets on, Cindy Lou gets on a little thing and he's like, I think I will go, whatever. She's like, really? He's like, no. It's like, just like, it's so rich. Like,
because he had to come up with a whole voice to a character we'd never heard a voice for. You
everything
know?
And the face and Jim Carrey's a genius. Like he has five or six performances out there that are like A plus, like culture making. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, totally. Even non-comedic ones like Eternal Sunshine.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, so good. I mean, Bruce Almighty does hold a special place in my heart. I don't know how. I mean, Ace Ventura hasn't aged well, but like his.
But no, it's iconic. I mean, it's iconic. So, the Mask also. I mean, like again, of course, not aging well, but like, damn.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, he's amazing. He's got an Oscar in him somewhere down the line.
I don't know. What's up with that? Did y'all see that Man on the Moon documentary that he did on Netflix about shooting the Andy Kaufman movie? He plays Andy Kaufman. Not mockumentary, really, but like it's a dramatized version of the shooting of Man on the Moon. He has a method actor situation that is definitely like makes you slap your hand against your head, but also you're like amazed by. But it's, you know, it's an interesting documentary. You should definitely, it's on Netflix. It's worth watching.
Okay, ooh. We'll definitely take a look. I need to check it out. Okay, so on the West Coast, did you know you definitely wanted to study theater in college? Or I guess I'm making an assumption here. Were you in the musical theater program at Michigan?
Yeah. No, I was. Yeah. Okay. And I didn't, I mean, I think like a lot of artists and just people in an artistic community at all, like there's a unfortunate bias toward this sort of starving artist narrative that like being an artist or being in the arts is not a real career path. That's sort of a hobby, you know? And so I went to an all boys prep school for high school, and actually Alex Brightman attended my high school and did this children's theater with me growing up, but he was a little older than me. And so as I was doing theater at this children's theater, I thought to myself, like, okay, if I really want to do this seriously, which it seems like maybe I could, I'm going to kind of look to the people around me and, you know, like use what you got. And so Alex had gone to this high school. So I applied there, and it was a Jesuit high school, really interesting environment in the Bay Area. So like really education forward. And I loved my time there, all boys, which is really interesting as well. Like yeah. it was a great high school experience, truly, for the most part. And which, who can say that truly? So I was thankful.
Was it like Dead Poets Society vibes?
It kind of was. Yeah, it kind of was. It was very like super heightened, sort of like, you know, Bay Area private school, like just, you know, like you can imagine, we weren't, but you can imagine just like the weed, like coming just out of every, you know, not in the classrooms, but you know what I mean?
Was it just like during the day?
It was a boarding school. And so I did not live there. I was maybe 30 minutes away. So like I commuted every day, but there were people who from like, you know, kids of parents who were at IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, sending their kids ahead to the States, to Silicon Valley, to attend Bellarmine so they could have a normal high school experience. And then they would catch up with their kids and begin their life in the tech sector or whatever. So like it was, it's a fascinating place.
Yeah.
And they did, they had a theater program too. Like one of my mentors, like almost like father figure during high school, was the head of the theater department there. And they did mostly plays and like, it's kind of like offbeat musicals, like Bat Boy and like, you know, they were doing like Tom Stoppard plays. We were like 14 years old. Like, I get this. It's like, no, you don't. But like, it's good exposure.
Yeah.
So it was very neat. So to have that and then this big sort of almost commercial like theater is not for profit, but it's like, you know, bigger musicals, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I really got a taste of both. And so when I was applying to high school, though, I was told so much, or to college rather, I was told so much that, you know, this isn't a real career and you're not going to be able to do this, that like I sort of just assumed that that would be the case. I applied to a bunch of colleges for other things, undecided here, you know, like journalism here, whatever. And my mom actually said, like, if I'm going to help you with your applications and do all this, like, you have to apply to one school for theater. Like, it's clearly something you want to do. So I was really grateful to have her. And so I did the research. I applied to Michigan. That was the only school I applied to. I went and auditioned in Chicago and got in and really never looked back. And then the first week at Michigan, I got off the wait list at Yale. And they were like, come over. You can still do it. And I was just like, I'm where I'm supposed to be, mama. There's no way I'm going to New Haven after that. Yeah. It was so fun.
Well, but, especially at Michigan, don't you all have like the big like freshman welcome where like the seniors perform, like that whole video?
Yes, the senior entrance.
I was just watching those with my boyfriend recently. I think a lot of it's inside baseball. Like some things I clearly don't know because I didn't go to Michigan.
Of course.
Yeah, we actually went to the Ohio State University.
Yeah.
So did you? Oh, cool.
Yeah. So rivals in a way.
Yes. Rivals in the way that I really could care less about. You know, I'm always like, oh, no way. It's more interesting to me. I'm like, neat. Yeah.
Who else was in your class? Like what era of Michigan was this?
My class would have had folks you would know, Stephanie Stiles, if you know her, Erica Henningsen. Yeah. Connor Ryan.
Oh my gosh. So many cool people.
I feel like I'm blanking and missing like.
That's okay. We're around the same age.
Yeah. 2014 graduated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's amazing. And then did you book Hamilton right out of, was that your first big thing right out of college?
No. Yeah. So the first thing I did out of college, I have to say, was I landed in New York and they had a switch up in a cast of a reading that they were doing. They called me about and they were like, okay, we need you to show up. My agents were like, you need to show up tomorrow, 10 a.m., sign this NDA and you'll be there. I was like, ooh, okay. So I show up for the rehearsal and it's a musical adapted from the Backstreet Boys music and the Backstreet Boys are all there.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm living, I'm litting really.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like, wow, this is beyond, right? Like, especially like our era, we're the same age. It's I'm me found dead. So
yeah.
I rehearsed this for like a week and sort of gigged around after that. But that was just like a funny first thing to have done.
And the NDA has expired now, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah. The production, I think, is long in the works and maybe belongs as a Vegas thing, you know?
Okay. So was it like the story of the Backstreet Boys or was it?
It was not. People were getting shot dead. People were getting like, it was beyond like, it sort of started as a loose adaptation and then it really branched into something different. But yeah, so I was like, okay, this is fascinating. First gig in New York, just being like, so this is working here.
Yeah.
But then a few months later, I auditioned I was a reader at Telsey for maybe like, for a few months. I had a friend who worked in the office and I started being a reader and learned so much. Like, I mean, you could not replicate that at a university, but like just being in audition rooms and seeing people go through like all different like means to an end, right? I mean, people who are hyper prepared, people who kind of come in and wing it, everything in between, the decorum and like the way we're taught, you know, to like go over to the piano and put your thing and whatever, and some people bringing their bags and dumping their stuff, and it's nothing is like better or worse, it's just the combination of things. It was just fascinating. So I was a reader for Wicked for a long time, and actually Emily Cook, who ended up getting Wicked, who's in Kimberly Akimbo now, I was her reader for like her whole process, and we're about the same age. So I would like text her afterwards. I wouldn't hear anything, but you know, I'd text her afterwards being like, you did so good. You know, like they had me leave the room and they were making the decisions and stuff. But I was like, I thought you were the best one, but we'll see, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And she ends up getting it. She goes out on the road. And then a few months later, I got it on Broadway because I came into audition, and they were like, okay, Ryan, here you go. Take your seat as the reader. I was like, oh no, I'm here to audition. Actually, they were like, oh, ho, like Ryan can sing, I guess. And I could sing for real. And they were like, oh wait, and so I joined the company in 2015, and then Emily Cook came from the tour to be a standby in New York, and she was the first Elphaba I ever performed with as Fiero. So it's like that's a funny awesome. Like full circle thing, and we're still friends, and so yeah, that's very cool.
That is so so cool. And then you moved on from Wicked to
Wicked to Waitress. Yeah. So I left Wicked after about a year, went into the original company of Waitress, which is awesome. Again, like such a unique and like million bucket list things. The Tonys, Good Morning America, original cast recording, like all that stuff. And also just to be in something that at the time felt like, and still does, like feels like a really like thoughtful and artistic swing at something. Like it's still commercially viable, of course, but like it wasn't just sort of a regurgitation of the movie. Like it was really like tried to have a style and a theatricality to it, which the movie has as well. But I was looking back on that, I'm really like amazed at what the creatives and what we all like put together. I thought that was a great show.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. And then joined Hamilton after that in the new year, went on tour for like 6 months San Francisco, 6 months LA, a few more cities after that, and then got moved to the Broadway company and was there for like a couple years until the shutdown. And that's where I was on stage at first. I did the, it's Man 5 is the track, but it's like James Reynolds and Philip Schuyler and all that stuff, dancing just enough. And when the heat gets too hot, I'm scurrying off stage to like wave a flag or something. Yeah. And then moved off stage and like picked up a few other tracks and became kind of like their standby, one of their, you know, standbys who covered many, many things like pinch hitter type of thing. So it was a great job. It was so much fun.
I'm sure. Yeah. Was it cool being out west in San Francisco? I'm sure you had a lot of people who were able to come and see in it.
Yes. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. It was so cool. Like I had, you know, people who would never come to New York, people who would never get to see Hamilton. Like I was getting tickets for people a lot because, you know, I had friends there who were like, I cannot pay that. Of course you're just like, but you have to see this. This is like once in a lifetime. Like we grew up together and did children's theater together. And now you work in tech or you do what, you know, a speech therapist, whatever. And like, I continued to do this. And now I'm like, I'm going to be Hamilton tomorrow and you can come see it. Like, I mean, it was just such a like unique, and I mean, for my mom and dad and like my family and stuff, is just such a unique way to like bring people, because New York, you know, it's not for everybody, it's hard to travel here and everything. So it was such a blessing. It was really cool.
That's great. If you could step back into any of the Hamilton roles you've played tonight, which would you like be dying to do?
I could play Hamilton tonight.
Okay.
I would need 1 hour of rehearsal. It's in my bones. Like it's been years and years now, but like it's, I mean, 4 years almost, but like it's just there. Like I'm doing a gig for like a guy who won a county commissioner's race in Pennsylvania that a friend of mine was the campaign manager for. And like for his inauguration, I'm like singing little things.
Always,
I do this thing where like I do my shot as all the characters that I played, which is like all of them. So it's like very funny. And like people, of course, it's like, oh, whoa, that's crazy. But I broke it out again. I was like, oh, right. Like, let me see this. I'm like muttering it under my breath, like maybe an hour before we started, just to like see if I remembered it. And it's all there. Like it will never go away. It's genius writing. Genius writing is really easy to memorize and remember, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, I can imagine. So that rehearsal process, what roles were you originally covering then? Because did you just learn them all sort of piecemeal then?
Kinda, yeah. I was my onstage track for the rehearsal process. So like I kind of picked up Burr because Josh Henry had just did it in Chicago for a long time. And so he took a little break and came to rehearsal a little later. So it was like, okay, like I was kind of stepping in and sort of learned it like here and there. We had another guy who was a a standby, like not on stage every night, who was also covering Hamilton and Burr. And so he was kind of known to be, he was going to be the alternate for Hamilton too. So it was like, I kind of left that and was able, you know, everybody's kind of like a first or second cover situation, whatever. But eventually, like, as you learn the show and you perform in it so many times, like, part of me, I'm just like, I don't see how you could not know everything, because everybody's on stage the entire time. The music is so infectious. And really all you have to do is sort of take in like the general image of it. It's like, why? The nice thing about Hamilton and these other shows that I've been lucky enough to be a part of because they're so good is like, nothing is unintentional. So like, if you're crossing from like here to here, it's not because you want to like, you just, the actor wanted to do that. It's to like, bring the light over there to make space for darkness on the other side so that they can load something in and it can go around on the turntable in time. You know, it's like, it's so smart. So once you start to understand that stuff, you're like, well, of course I'm moving there. It's not just like, then I cross when I sing this line. You know, it's like, yeah, there's yeah. a reason for everything, which I think is really genius.
Yeah. Wow. Did you ever have like a split track experience? Like, I just saw that thing in the news recently where someone was covering Hamilton and then played like Jefferson in the second act or something like that.
Really? Yeah.
I missed that.
There was a guy who did, or I guess it wasn't in the same show, but it was Hamilton and Burr in one day. Michael Luoye, who is one of the best actors I've ever worked with in my life. He was Hamilton with me for a long time, like on tour and on Broadway. But he's doing that new Mandela show that was in London that Shelley Williams is directing. I'm really excited for that. Once I did three or maybe four shows in a row as four different things. But I never did. I did some mid-show swing-ons and stuff. Like, actually, one of the first times I was on a Sfiero, it was a mid-show swing-on. And they were like, okay, like for act two, you're gonna go do it. And it was like one of the first times, and I was like 22. I was so nervous. But
that like Andy Carl or something like that is Sfiero.
Matt Shingledecker and then Jonah Platt.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm looking at you right now on the Zoom and you're giving me, have you watched Ted Lasso?
Yes, I've seen the first season.
You remind me a lot of whoever plays Jamie Tart. Oh, Phil Dunstall.
Really?
Has anyone ever told you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, no. I get John Krasinski all the time. But I, okay. John, yes, yeah, no, yeah. I know. I really take, oh, are you kidding? Of course I take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. People are always like, is that a
good He's him. Character? Are you kidding?
Yeah, I know.
No, please watch the show. He's everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So you've had some wild adventures, and Connor mentioned it earlier. You had this crazy year of three different world premiere musicals, or this was a year and a half. And I remember the Twitter conversation was, what is Ryan Vasquez going to do? You know, did it come down to your own decision? Was it something that you just felt drawn to one of the three projects, which were The Notebook, Water for Elephants, and The Outsiders? Can you tell us a little bit about what led to you returning to Broadway now in The Notebook?
Of course, yeah. So The Notebook and The Outsiders, I had actually been working on since prior to the pandemic. We did a couple readings of The Outsiders, and then The Notebook, we had done one reading in January of 2020. And then both of those shows had plans to open in Chicago back to back in 2020 later that year. So The Outsiders was going to be at the Goodman, and then Chicago Shakespeare was going to do The Notebook, which it ultimately did.
Okay.
And then in the shakeup of the pandemic, like, so much became uncertain, right? And so like a year into it, there's shakeups on creative sides with directors leaving, different people, like, you know, choreographers, everything, getting other gigs, deciding to reprioritize. And so you had a sort of realignment on a lot of these projects that set them back like so much. You sort of then clue into like the events of the world, not only like the sort of social revolution of it all, but like even just COVID on its own, right? Like, these variants were pushing and closing shows left and right. We sort of forget that. It's like, oh, Wicked canceled a performance, or oh, this canceled a performance but I mean, there were runs of shows that were like, we have 6 weeks to go and we're just realizing we're never going to get out of here. And so we're going to do three performances and be done. You know, I mean, six was supposed to open the day of the shutdown, right? It's like, that's such a sort of bizarre and iconic, like, you know, like emblematic thing of like what we were going through. So yeah, so with variants pushing it and everything like that, it ended up that The Outsiders changed theaters, got a new director, Danya Taymor. They got La Jolla for a production earlier this year. And The Notebook was right prior to that. And so as I was gearing up to leave for those, the Water for Elephants folks reached out and they were like, hey, we're going to do like a proof of concept reading in the summer, just the first 15, 20 pages or something of the show, to sort of show the circus, to get, you know, it's really like a sort of like focus group more than a reading or anything, you know? And so we did it at the Daryl Roth. We staged it. It was super bare bones. And like, I mean, I love theater like that. We did one of The Outsiders like that too, where all of the lights were just flashlights. I was like, let's put this on Broadway.
Yeah,
this is cool. Like, this is creative. So we did this sort of proof of concept thing, and people raved, and they were like, oh, this, you know, this is going to be amazing. We're going to move this to the Alliance like immediately in Atlanta. So while I was in Chicago doing The Notebook, they called, they were like, we got the Alliance and we want you to do it. And so I thought, okay, cool. Like, what are the chances it's going to do the Alliance in the summer and then less than 6 months later be ready to do a Broadway run? So I thought, you know, plant some seeds and like see them grow in the future. But of course, like when it rains, it pours. And I will say, like, I'm really thankful that I think what it's emblematic of, because this never happens. And I think what it's emblematic of is that, one, all of the personal stuff that I need to be better at receiving and just saying, like, you know, like, I deserve these things. I've worked really hard, like all of this. But I think the sort of societal part of it and seeing that Broadway, TV, movies, we are really in like a renaissance of art, especially with the timing of like the shutdowns and with the strikes and everything. Like,
yeah,
we're so hungry for it. And at the beginning of the pandemic, I remember saying, like, when people got in their darkest and we're saying, you know, like, it's never going to come back, theater's dead, Broadway's dead, it's like, we have been doing this since the beginning of like spoken language. And even before, we will continue to want to do it. We will continue to hunger for it. And we definitely have. And there's 15 new shows opening on Broadway this year. Everything from movies that you love, that you want to see adaptations of, older shows, shows that did work, shows that didn't. You have Tommy and Merrily We Roll Along. Sweeney Todd is selling like it's a, like it's Renaissance. Like, I'm literally like, this is wild. Like, like, I, it's really amazing. And even to Renaissance, I mean, like, to these concert tours that are, you know, oh, will people come? Will people want? I was there. Let me tell you, people wanted to come. Like, it was, it was just amazing. And so we're really in a renaissance, like a rebirth of art, like in a real way. And so I'm thankful that all those shows are all coming, even if it means I can only do one. And it was my decision. And I think that, you know, like, I love the nice thing too, is these out of town shows, like, you go and you really make a family or the closest thing to it. I mean, I have lifelong people in all of those buildings that I'll keep forever. I know. Aww. And The Notebook, I think, really, I'm really drawn to it because it's a great show and all that, but what, all those shows are great. And I think the difference with The Notebook for me is that it's creating a new standard for what an ingenue or like a leading person in a show can be. It's not the movie version of the show where, like, you slowly take your tank top off in the rain and that's the highlight. And the movie is great, but let's be honest, like, the way that we fetishize the romance of The Notebook is very, like, it's sexy, it's steamy, it's these things, which, like, it is, of course, but it's also about, like, who these people are, the way they think about the world, the way they intersect in terms of identity, just intersectionality in general. Like, the plot of it, I mean, is about, really, people say, you know, it's a love story. It's like, yes, but it's about this woman who was told by her parents that she could not be with this guy because of his socioeconomic status. She goes away, sees that he kept the promise to her of building this house, is drawn back to the house, is seeing again that he kept his promise again, and wrote all these letters to her over and over when she was, didn't think that she was, because the mom sabotaged it, whatever.
Yeah.
Then later on in life, she eventually chooses this person and takes a chance on what she is told. No, this won't work. This isn't by the book. This isn't the best option for you. She says, no, no, no. I'm going to take control of my own life and be self-actualized, be with this person, live the life I want to live. And guess what? Later on in life, when she loses her memory, the chance she took, the risk she took, pays off, because he continues to show up again and bring her back and eventually can and does. Like, it's not the story of I chased love and we just rode off into the sunset. It's like,
yeah,
it worked out. Like, he, the risk you took, that's not a movie. It's not a movie plot, you know, like, it can happen. And so, yeah, just in terms of like the depth of the characters, the critical thinking of like what it means to be a person, what it means to be in relationship with other people, in community with people, all of the factors. We're no longer just telling like a one-dimensional story about something. It feels like now we're really telling like a deep three-dimensional look on two individual people going through an individual paths in life, and they intersect in this beautiful way. And I really respond to shows like that. I think, like, you know, a show like Kimberly Akimbo, and I, we mentioned earlier, it's like, it's bizarre. bizarre, it's offbeat, but it's also slice of life in just the absolute way. There's no big moment that's happening. There's no, you know, like you get to just observe like reality. And I think that's really beautiful.
Very well said. Yeah. Wow. You're ready for your notebook press tour here.
It starts today, honey. Yes. Day after Christmas.
Were you in it when it was like Vanessa Hudgens, Jelani?
I was not. That was the first ever reading they did at Vassar. Right. That was just before I had joined. But yeah, and to see how it's changed since then. I mean, it's why sometimes I've spoken to like Jelani and like other people about it. And yeah. It's like, I mean, you know, shows change, but it's crazy. Like this song, that song, I've had so many different songs that I've seen come and go, and I'm like, I'm happy with the way they are now, but it is funny. I'm like, I have some cut things in here that yeah. You know, I think.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I've heard the music. I mean, I haven't heard it, but I have heard that the music is beyond.
The music is beyond. That is okay. Something I can say confidently. It's like it's the book too. I mean, like Becca Brunstetter, who wrote the book, wrote a lot of This Is Us. I mean, like she knows to get the weepies out, and it's perfect for the notebook. And Ingrid is like heartstrings musically, you know, like it's the most, I think that's what's beautiful. It's like Michael and Shelley directing, Ingrid, Katie, our choreographer. I mean, everything down from like Ben or lighting designer. I mean, everything is aligned. Like everything is aligned in the purpose of the show, the cast, everything is in the same lane. And I think like that's rarer than you think, you know, like everybody wants to get their part out there. Everybody wants to have their moment and get their stamp on something, whatever. A lot of cooks in these kitchens, and like we have felt all aligned in the goal from the beginning. So I'm really, really excited for people to see it.
Sounds like you're attached to the material emotionally too. So I'm glad that you made this decision, and I cannot wait. I'm glad it's one of the first new musicals that'll open in the winter, because it's chomping at the bit to see it.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Congrats
yes.
to you. I mean, what an exciting year. Just in general, and now to start off 2024 with a new musical is thrilling.
Did Ryan Gosling or Rachel McAdams come to see it in Chicago or nah?
Not in Chicago, but you know Rachel McAdams is doing a play on Broadway at the same time. Sure. So she, whoever the publicist is, get her to the opening for sure. Yes. And then, you know, you get her, that's one half. You gotta assume if my guy's available, then he comes.
Yeah, he's on the Oscar campaign trail anyway, so it would only be more buzz for both
yes,
of
us. Yes, remind the people where you came from, you know?
Exactly.
Like
So you're the letters in the rain scene. That's
yes.
your okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's
yeah.
Oh my god. Okay.
Well, each one really has iconic stuff, because like the young ones have like that if I'm a bird, if you're a bird, I'm a bird, and then
what's nice about it, like they don't use any, I mean, Becca has been really mindful to not use any of the screenplay. So like those iconic like lines and stuff, you know, are like the moments are coming because it's in the story, but the way it's written is like so creative and beautiful that you're like, oh, this is the scene where, I mean, the rain is so iconic, right? But it's like, you don't get this sort of like sing along of like, what do you want? Like, it's not that simple, you know, like it's like you, it's really its own like, I've been saying like it's not so much an adaptation as it is its own entity in like the Notebook universe, you know, like the time period is slightly different, the actors, obviously the way it's cast with three couples, those three different people all look differently. It's like we're creating our own piece that is the Notebook, as opposed to this is an adaptation of what you know. Come and watch the bouncing ball go across as we you know sing if you're a bird I'm a bird reprise. It's like, no.
And there's probably a Notebook musical that someone out there wrote that has that. You know what I mean?
I'm positive. You know, of all these shows, The Outsiders, I'm like, I'm surprised this isn't everywhere. I mean, right? It's these are iconic stories, and they're like Americana, like, you know, our nostalgia itch is being scratched big time these days.
Oh yeah.
And you can see, of course, with the shows coming, it's like, we love a rerun.
Yeah. Totally. Wait, really quick before we move on to Dose of Drama, I do need to mention that we saw The Wrong Man back. I mean, when did that play? Was that fall 2019? Or
Yeah.
Okay. The hook of the wrong man singing this song.
We still sing it all the time.
Oh my God. It has lived on, Ryan.
It's so good. Yeah. No, Ross. I mean, this man wrote Dangerous Woman.
Yeah.
Period.
There you go.
Like, it's just like, that's all you need to know. Like, in addition to 100 other things you'd know. But I mean, like, the hooks, the pop elements, and briefly, because I know I can really go.
That's okay.
Like, we used to gather around like the dinner table and listen to like the Sound of Music on vinyl for dinner, you know, like, and then that really stopped when we tried to create like scores that sounded like pop scores, but were not authentically pop scores. And you kind of get into this like domination of the Phantom of the Opera of it all, of like, no, these are still, I mean, Andrew Lloyd Webber writes iconically Andrew Lloyd Webber music. You, what you see is what you get. And then like, and it is beautiful. And you, I think, like, you know, and it's again aligned in the same style. So like, then you're starting to get now like pop artists, like the Kinky Boots of it all, right? Like these, you're getting the Jukebox Show for sure, but then you're also getting pop artists like Sarah Bareilles for Waitress, right? Like Ingrid, you know, Jamestown Revival, who wrote, you know, The Outsiders, like, and tons more, right? Original scores by, I mean, the Gatsby that's floating around with Florence and the Machine. Like, these are, I think, a good trend in terms of bringing, and, you know, Glee and Hamilton and these things really helped with this, but like making pop music and musical theater and theater music like popular again, and like, you know, Dear Evan Hansen, these albums go like platinum, like genuinely, right? So it's like, what is it about those that are really catching people? And Benj and Justin in that show, like, I mean, wrote these hooks and wrote these songs that are like palatable to us. And it's not to disparage something that's like complicated or like wouldn't be as much of an earworm, because obviously it's like Stephen Sondheim exists, like, I'm not denying it. But there's something too, it's interesting to me to see these theater scores really make their way into the mainstream.
Yeah.
That, because the people writing them, like Ross, who wrote The Wrong Man, is an elite at writing pop songs. Mm-hmm. And with a little bit of story and zhuzhing from people who do this for a living, it's like true collaborating, like interdisciplinarily, that is, I think, nice for our industry. There's so much talk, I think, and rightly so, about a lot of theater becoming inaccessible to young people, becoming inaccessible to a lot of communities that haven't been steeped in it their entire life. I mean, there's something beautiful about Gavin's show, right? That like, it's about the Met, which you sort of think, oh, okay, like this is going to be a Manhattanite, like New York experience, but actually is about somebody who has lived in Manhattan for all these years and has never been to the Met and is experiencing it for the first time. And there's something approachable and authentic about that. And as we get these more kind of aligned, like authentic stories being told that are about, even if they're movies, whatever, like it's about just life and personal experience in a way that's deep and that people can understand. So too, you need creatives who are like tapping into that same bone in, that's why I'm so proud of The Notebook, like for somebody to have written This Is Us, which is clearly tapping an emotional nerve all over the country, to then write a script for a musical for the first time ever and be guided by directors like Shelley and Michael, who are of course so experienced in terms of story and crafting these things. And for Ingrid to write songs and have no ego about bringing a song and a room full of people all dissecting it and saying, yes, that part works, but this isn't going to tell the story the way we blah, blah, blah. And with no ego, being like, great, takes the notes, come back with a different version the next day. It's like, it takes that when you're in someone else's pool a little bit. And now it feels like the pools are really starting to be shared, because like the mutual respect and just community of it all. So I'm really encouraged by shows like The Notebook, frankly, like other shows that I did this year, like that are really beginning to sort of mind meld in a way that I think will be appealing, not just to what, you know, somebody who's a self-identified theater goer. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know?
Yeah. Really quick about The Notebook. What's your favorite song in it right now? Like, you can't wait for audiences to hear it.
I cannot wait for audiences to hear. Oh, there are so many great songs. There really are. There's a song called Kiss Me that the younger Noah and Allie sing when they're first like about to kiss and be intimate, that where they're expressing their thoughts that they're having while they undress in front of each other. And it's the most charming, sweet, relatable, beautiful song. The middles like come out and sing with it in this gorgeous like build to this four-part thing, and it's so gorgeous. It's called Kiss Me. And I sing a song in the first act called Leave the Light On, that's very like what you'd expect Noah to sing, like, man, I'm sad on this house, where is she, I'll leave the light on just in case you come back.
Oh,
that is gorgeous. And one of those songs, when you first hear it, you're kind of like, okay, it's going to take a lot to tear me away from this.
And I need to mention your co-star, Joy Woods, who everyone who has been on this podcast who has either seen her or worked with her is like, she's the star to be. She is going to explode after this. I can't wait to see you guys together.
Yes, Joy is next up. She's amazing. She's not dancing a step in The Notebook, which is just so rich because she can move. And so it's like, the fact that that's just untapped is amazing to me. Voice of an angel. is like beyond her years in terms of the human experience and just the performing reality of it all, which is such a hard thing to get young people, period. I mean, people, period, but like younger folks, like to be authentically themselves on a stage when you've learned to like perform right. and do children's theater and all of that. And like, she's just so comfortable and can just get cooking. So yeah, no, that's a performance for sure to watch.
Of course you, Ryan. I mean, Connor and I have been obsessed with you and everything we've gotten to see you do. And in particular, The Wrong Man, like we said. And so I can't wait to see this next chapter for you. I'm sad that I'll miss Walk On Through, but hopefully in the future it'll come down the line. Well, so. We are sadly wrapping up. We've had such a good time with you today, Ryan.
I know, you're so cool.
So much fun. Yeah. Oh, thanks, y'all. You too. Thank you.
We like to end with a dose of drama just so we can hear from everyone and sort of leave the listeners with something to chase after. Although I will say you've given some great suggestions throughout this of different things. I will start. This could be a rant or a rave, by the way. Anything that you just have on your mind. And I am going to say, Connor and I got to see the movie Poor Things recently, which I don't know if you've got the chance to see it yet.
I saw it yesterday.
We're on this.
We are.
Or 2 days ago. 2 days ago.
Actually, it was 2 days ago for us too. It was Christmas Eve.
Yes, Christmas Eve.
I mean, I just thought, what am I watching? And then I thought, why is it brilliant? And Emma Stone is a solidified superstar. I mean, you know, yes. People who question her Oscar win for La La Land are shaking in their boots because she was absolutely brilliant as Bella Baxter in this movie. The way that she embodied what felt like a toddler type character up through this well-read woman by the end. It was so interesting. It always kept me guessing, and I felt like it told a complete story.
It did.
That's the thing that we keep saying is like, there was no silly mm-hmm. subplots. Like the whole thing just stayed all the way through. And with the exception of Godwin and his affiliate starting creating another sort of person, but I think
I would argue that adds to the character.
They were still trying. Yes. But anyways, I tell everyone needs to go see it. It is so good. It's so different than anything you've ever seen. Although I got some Nightmare Before Christmas vibes, like with Sally and the doctor.
When they took the brain out, the brain I was like, stuff. Oh, yeah.
It came out so clean. I was like, I love the art direction of that movie was just immaculate. Yeah. Like even something like that, like you're not going to take out a brain and it's going to have like, you know, everything connected uh-huh. or whatever. It's just, it's meant to just be like, this is a separate entity. I mean, just everything about it was thoughtful.
Yes.
I loved
art direction
it.
For
it
sure great. With the costumes. I mean, it was just so, I mean, I don't even know what era we were really supposed to, I mean, maybe like
gothic
Elizabethan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, right. But then even there are like, I mean, like satellite blimps, right. like above like the, and things that look like skyscrapers and like, oh, that scene where she's like running down from the hotel on those yeah. crumbly stairs with like the people beneath and it like zooms out in the hall. I mean, it's amazing what these movies are doing. I mean, it's a movie renaissance right it now. Is. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Like, so I think if you're looking for a good film, go see Poor Things.
Yeah.
It's highly recommend. What about Love you, Connor?
Okay, well, end of 2023, into 2024, I kept a list of all the books I read this year, and I only read 5 books. And I feel like that is, compared to the, probably 100 TV shows and movies I've watched, even more probably, I'm so humiliated. I'm embarrassed. I have stacks on stacks on stacks of books. I'm just going to read books.
Yeah, the laptop is sitting on all of them right now.
I know. I know. They literally just pop up my computer.
Drag her.
Whenever I'm like, should I start a new TV show? The answer is going to be I should pick up a book instead. I also want less screen time because my screen time average has become embarrassingly high per week. So
that's my a dose good New Year's resolution.
Good News resolution. Yeah. I feel like I do it every year, but I am truly committing this year because it's just bad. And I love reading. I love reading books.
You only really asked for books for Christmas for me.
True. Anyway, books for me. Ryan, do you have a dose of drama to end this episode of drama?
Oh, of course I did. I was thinking Poor Things. I can't lie. I also saw Saltburn recently, which is really great.
Yes.
American Fiction, amazing.
Oh, I need to see that.
I'm going to see Color Purple this week. And then I'm seeing all of these ads for like shows that are coming, and the marketing is looking gorgeous for a lot of these. And I'm just like, these shows, and having been a part of a bunch of them, I'm like, these are real swings, artistic swings, like real stabs at something. And then like TV, I mean, even something down to like the nostalgia of like the Squid Game competition show, right? But the fact that for anybody who's seen it, it's like they have squibs in their shirts and they pop and they die all campy and dramatic. And it's like there is just something about like art right now that is really like bubbling up to the surface. And I know that we sort of touched on this, but like, y'all listen to Lost Culturistas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Podcast with Matt and Bowen. This segment, when I read about it, I was like, oh, this is almost like an I Do Think So, Honey. So like, I Do Think So, Honey, artistic swings. Mm-hmm. And Poor Things is such a swing. Saltburn is such a swing. American Fiction, like, these are movies, even like A Killers of the Flower Moon, which is like, of course, like, I mean, we are really trying things, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just, there is a gap widening, I will say, between like regurgitation of something that we know and like a true original thing. I think there's less in the middle more and more, but the things that are trying and taking swings are really paying off,
yeah,
really working and working for like the masses. I mean, you're seeing the Jim Carrey's performance in The Grinch. I looked it up last night. I was like, this had to have made money. This movie made, you know, like 5-6 times its budget or something. Wow. Like, and it's because Jim Carrey, mm-hmm. is committing in this insane way at creating this iconic cartoon like into a person. No one else could have done, right. that. So I'm just so about where we're at in terms of the art being made. It seems silly and like sort of gauche to be like, we're back or anything like that, but it does feel like this year is really like a return to just the creation of art, which is exciting, but it's not a safe sort of tiptoe of like, well, let's just reboot and remake everything just to get people back in seats.
Yes.
It's like, let's do something real.
100%. So, yeah. I think the art that's being made and also the hunger from audiences is meeting in that way, because,
yes.
you know, it's showing in like Marvel, you know, all this movies that Marvel makes, the box office has dipped because people want, mm-hmm. new, original, exciting things. Mm-hmm. And
we are so back, Ryan.
We are so back.
We are so back. You heard it here first. Yes. Say that. We are back.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, this has been such a blast. Thank you for giving us some time. I know that you're very busy and like it's the holiday season, but it meant a lot to us that you spent a little bit of time with us today. Everyone can follow you on Instagram. You're at It's Ryan Vasquez, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, y'all. This was so much fun. Thank you. More soon.
Oh, okay. Happy we did it. We'll let you know when we come and see The Notebook for sure.
Yes, please do. Please do.
Yeah. And while everyone's following Ryan, follow us at The Drama Podcast. I'm at Connor McDowell. Dylan's at Dylan McDowell.
That's right. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.